Welcome to Enterprise Systems Podcast. I'm James E. Powell, Editorial Director for ES, and your host for this program. With the introduction of the IP standard, the network security landscape definitely changed. Since that time, the interoperability promised to IT has yet to appear, and IP services represent a very large security risk. Vendor suggestions that replacing hardware as a viable approach to improving security is both costly and time-consuming. I spoke recently with Grant Asplin, CEO of Seattle-based MetaInfo, to learn what steps he recommends IT take to improve its security in this IP-centric network environment.
Let's start by looking at how the security landscape has evolved.
Well, it's pretty interesting. It's changed quite a bit over the last 10 or 15 years. It's really back when networks started to become quite pervasive and even to the point of ubiquitous in corporations, security was inherent to the fact that you had a 3Com network and I had a Microsoft network and someone else had a Banyan Vines network, and so even if you did bring in your sewing machine, you know, your compact luggable, there was no threat that you were going to be on my network because yours had a NIC card for your network, not mine. So we didn't even really consider security for the network. Things changed quite a bit when the world became an IP world. And in the early days, there was a great deal of discussion when there was this transformation about the IP network starting to become the de facto standard network. There was a great deal of discussion about operational efficiencies and controlling the packets as they traveled up through the stack. There was an initiative called DEN, a Directory Enabled Networking Initiative, that was when we first were introduced to directories like LDAP and Active Directory from very large companies we all know and love. Interestingly enough, those operational efficiencies and the idea of wondering, should I allow Jim's packet to go across this subnet or across this particular portion of the network, that all went out the window when the bubble blew up. And it really became a race to get connected to the information superhighway. And during that race, we just started putting, network jacks, not unlike electricity, right? The electrical outlets are every 8 feet and hot. And that's what we see now in most corporations. If you are in the corporation, you have access to the network. If you're out of the corporation, you're not supposed to be on the network. And so network security has really been something that we've taken a while to get to because we've been protecting the stack, again, not in the flow of communications like we were discussing in the middle and late 90s when IP networks were taking off, but now we've been protecting it from the top down. And the first model that we saw just overtake the world were the perimeter model, right? The moat around the castle, right? We got firewalls, and you know, if you're in, you're in. If you're out, you're out. And one of the first problems that companies faced was, well, wait a minute, I'm in the hotel, but I'm supposed to be in the network. How do I get there? And so we've seen remote access solutions. They're abundant and very reliable. Have been around for a long time, and we've seen security essentially traveled down through the stack over the last, 10, 15 years. And where we are now is at the network infrastructure. What I always say is, we're at 3-2-1. Those last three layers of the stack are the layers that need to be protected. The conundrum that corporations are facing around the world is, for the last 10 or 15 years, they've been building and building and building their underlying core infrastructure with this terrific interoperability across multiple vendors. Whether it's vendor A, vendor B, vendor C, they could buy switches and routers and all types of core infrastructure devices without a great deal of concern about interoperability. It was there. And now things have changed quite drastically because we've realized, well, we've got most of the layers protected except 3-2-1, and now we're hearing about these new architectures for what I always reference as networks with no edge. You know, to throw away the notion of a firewall or a perimeter, and really where the endpoint itself to the network becomes the edge of the network. The problem is, I've got this huge weighted investment in my infrastructure. And it, you know, my router's route and my switches switch just fine, thank you. But these new blueprints, these new architectures are calling for you to make sure all of them sing and dance well together. And that's the problem. Because it's a ferocious cost to replace all of that core infrastructure to get to the interoperability that we're, you know, hearing companies talk about. So the evolution has gotten now down to really the last three layers of the stack, and it's presenting what I believe may be one of the greatest, if not the single greatest, transformations within the IP network over the next 5 to 10 years, because we're all going to have to deal with how do we protect the network and how do we afford it.
Right. Well, now there's more than cost just involved. For example, in replacing all those switches, you have the time to implement such a gigantic project as well.
Unquestionably. And certainly you could argue that that time in and of itself is a cost, right? I mean, it's just the human resources that are required, let alone the hours in a day, to go through and do a wholesale upgrade of all of your core infrastructure is very, very difficult. And I mean, we have one customer that I actually asked, you know, hey, Kevin, are you taking a look at NAC or NAP or 802.1x implementation? And you know, very large financial institution. And he laughed out loud. And he said, Grant, we have over 3,500 switches. For us, NAC is a non-affordable choice. And really, we can't do it. We have to find other ways to solve that problem. Moreover, all of that equipment is not depreciated yet. It all works just fine. So there's a real challenge to having to replace it, let alone the human resources required, when everything works just fine. It's doing what it was supposed to do. And that's why, you know, we really believe there are alternatives where you can leverage software to accomplish the same thing if it's all you know, installed and configured properly.
Okay, so if it's not a hardware solution, what is the software aspect that you're looking at?
Well, it's layer three, really. We're back at those directory or infrastructure services. You know, for the most part, it's that invisible meringue in the network stack that most people are really unaware of. And, you know, I always joke and say that, you know, the world is made up of, if you want to be very, very general, two buckets of users, right? We have Gilligans and we have professors, right? The professors are those that understand the number should never be more than 255. The professors are those that know snorts, not just the sound a pig makes, right? That really understand the functioning of the underlying network, that know what DNS is. But the Gilligans, which is the vast majority of the users and far and away the fastest growing user population, they're the ones that say, looks just like a phone jack, it's a little bit bigger, and when I plug it in, my hard drive flickers, and then I can get on eBay. They really don't understand what's underneath it, nor should they have to. Now, I'm certainly not proposing that a software-based solution that can be beat or bypassed by a professor is not or is something that is as good as something that is put into the core. I'm not proposing that in any way. But what we have to start to ask ourselves is, what are we protecting from? What are we protecting against? And what are our real concerns? You know, we all know where the money is. The money is in banks. And most of us follow protocol. We stand in the queue, we go to the teller window, you know, we fill out the slips, and that's how we get money, provided we have some. But we all know that if we wanted to be malicious and we really wanted money, all we got to do is walk in, hand a little note to the teller and have a paper bag that looks like we have something in it and steal the money. And my point is, the vast majority of people in the world are not going to go into a bank with malicious intent. They're going in to use the service. And that's really how the network has become. So most organizations, while they do have a fair amount of users, that may know how to actually statically configure their machine, for example, they're really not there with any malicious intent. And in the same way that you and I know, if we were on a phone conversation right now, that phone conversation could be tapped. We all know a phone can be tapped. I mean, that's common knowledge. But then when you ask how many know how to tap a phone, it's a much smaller population. And then we take it one step further and say, how many of you have actually tapped a phone in the last couple of weeks and do it on a regular basis? And that, again, is a much narrower, smaller group of people. And so leveraging infrastructure services, that first layer of software within the network that every network has to have, IP services, you can really effectively put in what I always reference as a cattle guard. Right? If you've been on a farm before, you know that a cattle guard, or as they say down in the southern hemisphere, a cattle grid, is the slats. In fact, in places in Mexico, it's just white painted lines on the road. But for the target audience, it's a very, very effective fence. But you and I know it's a road. It's a surface that we can drive across, we can walk across. But for the cow, it's a very, very effective fence. Well, by leveraging IP services and creating an environment that enables you to ensure these IP services are part of your security strategy, not your security problem, by just allowing anyone onto the network, you effectively can put in a very, very effective fence for the target audience. And I would put reference cows as the target audience in the IP world as those that either are not malicious, even if they know how, or that just simply don't understand how the underlings of that infrastructure really operate. They just know that's how they get on the network. And so my suggestion is, for companies that have a very significant weighted infrastructure, look at leveraging that first layer of true software in their infrastructure, layer three, those core services, as a means to protect and control access to their network. And that buys you the opportunity to now really focus on the truly malicious, not those that have no malicious intent. Again, if I go back to the cattle grid and protecting, keeping cows out of a given field, it doesn't stop the fox from getting into that field, but certainly it's much, much easier to see, target, and eradicate the fox in the field without a bunch of cows. So it's a really, really effective way to control access and keep honest people honest. And let's face it, a contractor working for you or me that comes into my office would be a fool to deviate from my acceptable network use policy that leverages IP services and requires that individual to authenticate or be scanned for vulnerabilities before they get onto the network. Even though they still could plug into the network jack, it's a very effective way to use those services as a way to stop access to the network.
So what are some of the ways of leveraging those services? What should an IT manager look for? What are the best practices that he or she should employ?
Well, certainly, one of the reasons that IP services are often overlooked is, I always kind of joke and say, they're the ones that come free in the cereal box. Right? I mean, no one would buy a network operating system from any vendor if it didn't support an IP network or the ability to get onto the internet. So, in fact, the IP services are free, right? You can download them. They're open source. They're from the standards bodies that want to ensure everyone can get onto the internet. But not all of them, and certainly the free ones, have not been designed with your security strategy in mind. And that's where looking to true commercial-grade, enterprise-class infrastructure services, you'll see that there's a very significant trend towards leveraging and enabling those services to not only be best practices, enterprise-class, fully redundant, highly available services. Because remember, if your users are not able to get an IP configuration from the IP services on the network, they're not on the network. Just because we plug into that network jack, and I would even suggest that it doesn't even have to be plugging in anymore with the proliferation of wireless, But remember, just because I make a connection to an access point through the air does not mean that I am on an IP network. The way that I am on an IP network is I obtain IP configuration for my host. And most companies are using dynamic addressing, what's called DHCP, to dynamically configure the hosts that are coming onto their network. And therein lies the real challenge. And what I'm proposing is use those IP services and control those IP services as an effective means to interrogate the user and require them to authenticate to the directory infrastructure that you've invested in, be it LDAP or Active Directory, and ensure those users are your users. Furthermore, using these IP services, you have the ability to actually quarantine a host without having to change any of the underlying core infrastructure. But to quarantine a host, what amounts to giving a network configuration dynamically to that host for a network of one, them. They sit in a bubble. And while in that bubble, you can provide a static route to that host so it can actually find the resource to authenticate, so it can find a resource to be scanned for policy or scanned for vulnerabilities, and you can ensure that this, you know the user that is trying to access the network, you know the system is safe, clean, and up to policy before accessing the network, then have your services allow that system to access the network. And that's what's available today.
So where does MetaInfo fit into this landscape?
Well, we had the fortunate benefit of looking through the lens of security, if you will, for the better part of 4 years. Being acquired by Checkpoint Software in 1998, we were part of the world's largest security company at the time. And so everything we did was looking through the lens of security. Now, we were the first company in the world to port the bind code to support the Windows operating system. So we've been in the layer 3 IP services space for better than a decade. When we had a management buyout and reestablished the company at the beginning of 2002, the focus and initiative really turned to ensuring these IP services could be part of the overall enterprise security strategy, not the biggest security problem. And it was when we embarked on putting controls into the infrastructure services so that they would comply with the standard protocols and the standards required for a DHCP service, but do it on my terms, not on the protocol's terms. So when someone is using our safe DHCP, and they have their network configured accordingly, when an unknown user or unknown system tries to access the network, our DHCP service will provide a network configuration of one, holding that system in a bubble, until which time we can validate who the user is. We can validate whether or not the system is compliant with policy before we grant that system access to the network. And we've chosen to do that by creating a framework that allows us to very easily integrate with other best-of-breed vendors. So we have a long list of authentication and what we call policy and integrity modules to make it very, very simple to integrate with leading directories, with a variety of endpoint security vendors, with policy scanning and vulnerability vendors, and a great deal of flexibility on exactly, you know, how it wants to be, how you want to implement it. You know, some organizations that, for example, universities and open environments, they own the network, but they don't own the systems trying to access the network, or at least don't own all of them. So they can easily implement our safe DHCP solution with the ability to scan those systems for vulnerabilities without requiring authentication. They just want to make sure that they're not vulnerable. Contrast that with maybe the private sector, more the commercial enterprise. They may want to actually only scan users for vulnerabilities that are in fact members of their domain or members of their enterprise. So they'll be able to easily require authentication first and then scan for vulnerabilities. And we have a wide range from something as simple as the open source Nessus scanning to something as comprehensive as products from Checkpoint that can actually do file system and registry setting checks to validate that the users really should be on the network.
And then with that in place, the security administrator can turn his attention to those 2%, the foxes, that are really the malicious threats.
Exactly. And again, it's not to say that if we can't stop them at layer two, that isn't better. And I'm not proposing that in any way. However, if we can accomplish 98% of the task for a fraction, maybe a tenth or less of the cost, and change the rules so that I'm not beholden to a vendor's architecture that requires me to use all of their hardware, and actually put in a strategy that buys time so that I can depreciate my equipment, I can allow the hardware vendors to get settled and get some interoperability across multiple vendors, then that's a much better strategy and really has substantially reduced my risk. You know, the fact of the matter is we all thought this promise was coming with 802.1x, but evidence 802.1x is not enough are these new architectures like NAC, because they not only use the 802.1x protocol, but they're using LEAP and EAP and RADIUS. Interestingly enough, there are very, very few companies in the world that can do this, but they've extended each one of these protocols. And while they claim to be standards-based, they're in fact standards-based solutions that are proprietary. And of course, they're pushing these extensions to the protocol back to the standards bodies, but they've yet to be adopted widespread, like the true TCP/IP stack has been adopted widespread. So it's a way that you can continue to leverage the core infrastructure you've invested in, and change the dynamics so that you can replace that core infrastructure when it's best suited for your budget, your human resources, your environment, and still have a very, very effective cattle guard for most of the users coming onto your network.
Now, do you see that interoperability coming anytime soon? 5 years out? Do you want to hazard a guess?
It's a difficult one. You know, the two titans, the two largest vendors pushing these architectures, one is a software company we all know and love, one is a big hardware company. And while we've heard them talk in the past, certainly when they introduced LDAP and Active Directory as their directory architectures, they both pledged publicly full and complete interoperability between those two directories. And this was back in the middle and late 90s. And I think we all know where we are today with that interoperability. Well, we've recently heard the same two companies pledge the same complete interoperability between their network architectures. But the reality is something completely different. While they've agreed on an API suite on the client side, on the desktop, they're completely at odds in the back office. And there I think we're going to see, it's going to be a long time before we really are going to be able to guarantee that we can enjoy the same level of interoperability that we have today within the core infrastructure with these new network architectures. I think unfortunately it's a long time coming.
Well, thank you for the background and your perspective, Grant.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
You can find more information about MetaInfo's hardware and software solutions, including Safe DHCP, which Grant mentioned, at www.metainfo.com. Thanks for listening. For more insight into IT security, check out the security section of Enterprise Systems at www.esj.com. There you'll also find the latest IT technology news updated daily. And be sure to check Enterprise Systems newsletter, our ES RSS feed, or the ES homepage for information about our next podcast.